Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing okay, Justin. With the topic tonight, I'm already feeling a little nervous and a little excited to talk about this controversial case.
Yeah, this one big, at least in America, and I've seen some of our international listeners even write in and say, yeah.
It's your fault because you're the one. I mean, typically I'm setting up what we're covering and you came to me with this and you said, I want to talk about this guy.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know, Aaron actually cherry picks all the cases and hands me the schedule. On occasion, I will say, I want to cover this. He works it into the schedule.
And almost every time it ends up being something that I get really into. And then, of course, we start getting your feedback. So Justin has a pretty good eye for these things.
Yeah. I don't know if I could pick a winner every week like you do, but every now and then I think this is something we need to talk about. And this one is the Brock Turner case, which happened back in January 2015 on the Stanford University campus. And it's a campus sexual assault. In California, they don't use the term rape for a sexual assault unless it's genital penetration, but for an object, it is a sexual assault. So just letting you know that some of these terms will be used, and this is what the case is about. Another podcast, and a couple of people have asked me to give them a shout out, but they did like a 2 or 3 parter on this. It's called Getting Off, and it has nothing to do with sexual nature. It's called Getting Off because they're two defense attorneys that talk about court trials and, you know, how criminals get off or, you know, get convicted, whatnot. So no innuendo there whatsoever. But yeah, this is, it's like the Charlie Tan case. It's one of those things where it's very open and shut, I think. But when it does, when it's all said and done, your brain hurts. So, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes it's not about knowing what you know. It's about proving what you can prove.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do know that a lot of our listeners are anticipating this conversation, anticipating this episode. And some of them are actually really nervous. They're afraid that they'll listen and their blood will start boiling.
Or they, I don't know what they think we're going to say about this, but we're approaching this case just like we approach every other case. We're going to be fair and balanced, and we will give the perceptions of the prosecution and the defense. But I think Aaron and I do come down on a side here that's pretty obvious because there's some people are just very indefensible.
Well, I know I was going to say just expect your blood to boil, but I don't think it'll be because of us.
No. So the victim in this case is commonly referred to as Emily Doe, and I will refer to her as Emily. I don't want to refer to her as the victim because I like to give her a persona of some type and not just a nameless person that, I don't know, people can't connect to. So
they were trying to protect her identity,
yeah,
by using Emily Doe. Justin, who is Brock Turner?
Brock Turner is a All-American top swimmer at Stanford. He's going to school on a scholarship. That's how good he is at what he does.
And at Stanford, no less.
Yeah. He's considered an Olympic hopeful. So dude's on top of the world, and I'm sure that probably gives him a little bit of an ego too. He is 19 years old. He is 6'3". And very much in shape because of him being a top swimmer. He doesn't really have much of a criminal record. I think it's like a minor in possession charge that he had for having alcohol on him, which that's everyone in college, I think. But I don't know. I didn't dorm or anything when I went to college. So,
but, you know, in 2015, being 19 years old and attending a very good school on scholarship, we wouldn't expect him to have a record.
No. I guess he was out with some friends and they were drinking beer in public and a cop busted him.
And so not really that weird.
No, no. Not that out of the ordinary. I could find only little bits of this prior charge and arrest, but it is said that when the cop pulled up that Brock and his friends might have fled the scene and were caught up too. So a little foreshadow there. Some people like to run away from their problems.
Emily Doe in this case in 2015 was 22 years old and living with her parents in Palo Alto.
She was a college grad.
She only was out that night because she wanted to hang out with her younger sister. Yeah. And so it was kind of like a last minute decision to go out, kind of on a whim. Yeah. Let's just go do this.
Yeah. She's hanging out with some friends and her younger sister. And I'm sure at this point she's done the whole college thing. So this is old hat to her. She's not going out to meet guys or anything. She's just going out to have a fun time with her girlfriends and her sister.
And so there were four of them, her sister, herself, and then two friends, and they decide to go to a fraternity party. This party that they go to before midnight, I think it was at like 11 p.m., mm-hmm. It was Kappa Alpha.
Now, she admits to pre-gaming, which that's the term of you drink before you go to the event.
Yeah, she had four shots of whiskey, right?
Yeah, that's what she claims. And let me just preface that with, by no means in any way, shape, or form do I think that just because somebody's drunk or has drank, they deserve to be sexually assaulted, ever. But alcohol is a factor in the trial, so that's why we're mentioning it.
Yeah, and it's really sad that we have to kind of give that disclaimer that just because someone's drinking, that they don't deserve anything criminal to happen to them. But honestly, there are people out there that don't get it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Brock also has been drinking before 11. He claims that he had shots of Fireball and at least five Rolling Rock beers.
That's a decent amount of alcohol.
Yeah. If I drank that, then I'd be wasted. But I'm a lightweight. I don't drink anymore. Some of you that have met me at meetups, I don't drink, really. I've probably drank more than most of you combined in my lifetime. So I don't really need to do that anymore in my life. So I just enjoy conversating and being social. But in college, you're living it up. You got that social lubricant to have a good time around people that are probably smelly and disgusting.
Yeah, I've never overdone it, so I've never like stopped. I've just had a little bit here and there.
So at 11, they arrive at the party, and the party, of course, has kegs and all kinds of alcohol. There are many witnesses at this party that will attest to Brock being very aggressive with women and hanging on women, hitting on women, trying to kiss women. And even Emily's sister has Brock, making out, trying to make out with her, like kissing her cheek, licking her face. Cause yeah, that's awesome. So he's on the prowl. He's in that mode.
And while they're there, her younger sister, Emily Doe's younger sister, decides to head out with one of her friends who's feeling a little too drunk. She wants to go back. She wants to go to sleep. So she accompanies her out. But that leaves Emily Doe still at the party. And now she's with Brock Turner. But we don't know, do we, whether she knew that Brock Turner had been behaving that way? Do we know for sure? Or is this just an unknown element to the case?
I guess if she witnessed Brock's actions towards her little sister, then she would know. But there's tons of people at this party. They're mostly hanging out on the back porch. They're not inside the house. According to Brock, he sees Emily. He sees this attractive woman and decides to start dancing with her on the dance floor. Wherever that dance floor would have been, I have no idea if it was the middle of the living room on the coffee table or what. But he says that they didn't speak. They just started dancing and grinding on each other, and everything was just unspoken, and he was into it, and he assumed she was too because she was dancing with him.
And it's after her sister leaves that there isn't much time before she heads out with Brock.
Yeah. After midnight, there are text messages that she's sending to her friends and her boyfriend. She has a boyfriend. So again, kind of giving more weight to her, I'm not going there to meet guys. I'm not going there with any intention. Not that that matters, again, but she has a boyfriend, so she's not looking to hook up.
Just have some drinks. Dancing's good, but not. There's probably no intention there for her to hook up with anybody because she's already got a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. This is where things get weird.
Yeah. Emily, again, says that she might have had the equivalent of two more shots at the party because she had, you know, one of those red plastic cups and somebody had filled up a little bit of vodka in there. She guesstimates a couple more shots. If you look at the amount of alcohol she says she's consumed and then you look at her blood alcohol content later, it doesn't really gel. She probably drank a lot more than she's saying, but again, why does it matter?
Well, and also if you've been drinking, it can be difficult to remember exactly how much you've had.
And Brock has had the equivalent amount of alcohol, but again, he's 6'3", high metabolism. He's probably going to process the alcohol much better than most. But they somehow disappear from the party. Brock says that they walked hand in hand out to the back, down the block, and she falls down between two dumpsters, and he falls down on top of her, where this is all Brock's testimony, really, is they started making out just in between these two dumpsters. Now, if you see pictures of these two dumpsters, it's not the most, I don't know, romantic makeout spot. I mean, just two dumpsters, really. It's also surrounded by a wooden privacy fence on three sides. There's an opening on the front, and there's two dumpsters in there. Apparently, they're between these two dumpsters on the ground. The prosecutor will say this is where he led her and pushed her down to the ground to attack her, whereas Brock will say they were just looking for some privacy, and this is just where they happened to end up landing.
Next to dumpsters. You know, looking at the picture, it's clear that there are trees around. I don't know. I can't imagine lying down on concrete near some dumpsters is better than laying down on the grass or amongst the trees there.
Or behind the enclosure that the dumpsters are in. But you know what? Thank God they didn't lay behind the enclosure, because then they wouldn't have been spotted later.
Two PhD students who are Swedish.
They're riding their bikes. It's around 1 a.m. There are streetlights around, but it's 1 a.m, so it is dark out. They're cruising along, and it's Peter Johnson.
And Carl Frederick Arndt.
Yeah, so Johnson and Arndt. They roll up, they see some motion between the dumpsters. They see that it's two people laying there. They assume that they're hooking up. But it becomes very apparent to Arndt that there's something wrong here. And he stops his friend and says, what's going on over there? And they have a quick discussion, and they decide the female is unconscious and there's this dude on top of her, and he has her disrobed, has her dress hiked up, removed her underwear. He sees what he interprets as thrusting motions. That's all the more graphic I care to get, really. And they decide to intervene.
So, which is what you'd like to hear people say that they're going to do, because if something's happening that you think is a crime, they always say you should report it or you should do something.
Yeah.
Right? They always say bad things only happen because good people did nothing.
Exactly. And these guys, shout out to the Swedes, they decided to take action, and they get off their bikes, they walk over, and they say, they use much more colorful language, but they say, what the hell are you doing? She's unconscious.
And they said that this guy, who later they find out is Brock Turner, looked up and then slowly got off of the woman and then ran away.
Yeah. They give chase, and other witnesses that are nearby see these two guys catch up to Brock, who Brock gets pretty far, like over 50 yards away. Like,
he's a fit guy.
Yeah.
I mean, not that these Swedish guys look like they're not fit, but I mean, they're up against an Olympic hopeful swimmer.
Mm-hmm. So they grab a hold of him and try to pin him down to the ground. Brock will say that they were beating him, and that's why he ran. They were being highly aggressive and trying to beat the crap out of him. But according to other witnesses and according to the Swedes themselves, no. They actually were very nice and respectful in a way of trying to detain Brock, trying to hold him down to prevent him from getting away.
Yeah, I don't think we need to interpret this for anyone. I think we all know probably how it went down.
Yeah, so they have Brock. The police are called, and they're calling paramedics also, because Emily is not responsive. She's passed out, but she's not responding to anything. No stimulus. She's totally unconscious at the scene.
She's incapacitated.
Yeah. The paramedics show up. They're shaking her. They're yelling at her. They use the smelling salts. Still no reaction. It's not until they, I guess it's pinch her nail bed, meaning they squeeze the end of her finger and put a lot of pressure into her nail bed, that they get any kind of reaction out of her.
That will really hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that will get your attention.
This is the level of unconscious she's at. And personally, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, is she dying of alcohol poisoning? Like, this is bad. Get her to the hospital immediately.
Well, and that's what paramedics are for. They're there to save you.
Yeah. And they take her to the hospital, and she doesn't wake up until after 4 a.m. in the morning. So over 3 hours, she is completely incapacitated. Just think about that. And when you think about Brock saying, well, we walked over to these dumpsters and then fell down and we're making out, and this was all consensual. But then two guys come along and say, that woman's passed out. What's going on here? Just keep that in mind. At 6:30 a.m., Brock is speaking to the police, and he's giving his statements about how this was totally consensual, but there wasn't a lot of talking going down, so it was all just physical cues, and we're going to continue on, and they were planning on having sex, and Brock is saying that she is conscious. He is saying that her eyes are open and she is into this act and she is well aware of what's going on. This is his statement. So, big contradiction here between Brock's statement and other witnesses.
But you said Emily Doe wakes up. And what does she say when she wakes up?
She doesn't remember anything. She is totally confused. She doesn't know why she's in the hospital. Very much confused that she's that drunk, almost to the point of she thinks somebody might have spiked her drink, but they did do drug tests on her and it didn't appear that they found any kind of date rape drug or anything like that.
Do we know what her blood alcohol content level was when they checked it?
Well, when they check it in the morning via a blood test, it's like 0.17, but then you have to back that up. For every half hour, you deduct or add, you know. So they assume that at 1 in the morning, her blood alcohol was 0.22.
Well, that's quite a bit.
And Brock's not far behind with his blood alcohol content, but he's able to stand up. He's able to realize that there's a danger and sprint away. They don't even know, like, they get to Emily, but they don't even realize that Brock's being detained because they don't see it. He made it so far away that they have to be informed of this and then go talk to Brock. And it's even said that when the police arrive, they notice that he is erect. He's not nearly as drunk as Emily.
Emily Doe doesn't remember what happened to her, but other people know what happened. So how does this get to the court?
Well, you have the testimony from the two Swedish guys who are saying this was an attack. She was unconscious. You also have the medical examination of Emily. She does have some light bleeding and trauma on her. So she starts to understand what happened here. And she has no recollection of ever consenting to Brock Turner.
So if she knows that Brock had assaulted her and she knows that she would not have given him consent, in her mind, this is a crime.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the police and prosecution go with, is they have to get her to say, yeah, let's press charges. It's going to work out a lot better if she's on board with this.
Some people might say, if she doesn't remember, then why are we even talking about this? How is this even a case? But wouldn't we tell them the Swedish know?
Yes. In most sexual assault cases, you do not have eyewitness testimony. You do not have anybody else involved. It's usually just between the victim and the perpetrator. So we have a very unique case here of other people witnessing it. And this takes the whole he said, she said to...
But the Swedes said.
Exactly. And that's the whole game plan here is we have these other guys that witness something that is obviously a crime and they're going to testify to that.
Yeah, that's something that I've heard it in movies too. They'll say, well, how will I know when something goes wrong? And people will say, no, you'll know.
Yeah.
And in this case, these two gentlemen, they saw something and they knew that it was a crime.
So this is going to trial. And of course, Brock is going to play that card of this was consensual.
This, she gave me consent.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't verbal, it was consensual. And he really plays up the fact that she was the one kind of leading him. She was the one that was coming onto him, which we already have some contradictions there of he was the one that was being aggressive at the party. Emily wasn't there with that intent.
And that's something they work out at trial.
Oh, yeah.
At the trial, this is where the prosecution can bring in witnesses. And there are women who even the weekend before had a run-in with Brock where he was being very, very aggressive. They described him as being touchy and that he was putting his hands on one of the women's upper thighs because he was so insistent. It bothered her. He was being too aggressive.
Now the prosecution's going to play this out as he was a predator on the prowl and he found his target and he let her out and she was obviously too intoxicated to know what was going on and he either carried her to the dumpsters or led her there, and then she was already in a passed out state.
And he could very well have carried her there.
Oh, absolutely.
Just given his size, his strength, and then her size. One of the things that becomes a big part of this trial is the character of these people. I mean, Brock has his supporters, and they say that he is, as a high school teacher of his had said, he's an individual of true kindness, compassion, and promise. They say that he's really polite, that he's a nice, gentle person. You know, those are witnesses who are building up his character for the jury, for the court. Not only that, but they really try to present Brock as this guy that doesn't know a lot about parties. What do you think about that, Justin?
Really? He's pre-gaming before the party. He's in a fraternity. Come on.
Yeah, it's really weird because they try to say that, oh, he comes from such a small town. Look, I don't care what size your town is, people party, exactly. Right?
No, I mean.
They act like it's only a big city thing. Oh, you have to be from the big city to party. The investigation found that on Brock Turner's phone, there was evidence of him engaging in excessive drinking and using drugs. And the drugs that he used were cannabis, LSD, ecstasy.
He's learning college life pretty quick, apparently.
Right. If he had no experience partying, he's dived in.
I realize that some people don't let loose until they get to college, but once they get there, they figure it out pretty quick. And for two or three shots of Fireball and like five or six Rolling Rocks, I think he was doing just fine.
But they're really doing this so that you'll believe him when he says he didn't do it, right? I mean, when his defense team is saying, believe our client. He's a good guy. Look, all these people are telling you he's a great guy. She doesn't remember anything. He was there. He's saying that she gave him consent, that she was into what was going on. So this isn't something that we should be debating anymore. He's a great guy. He's a hopeful in the Olympics. He's going to this great school. He's on scholarship. This is not the kind of guy that gets sent to prison.
Yeah, but my problem with this is Brock doesn't say, I was hanging out with Emily, we were both drunk, and we started making out, and then lo and behold, oh, she's passed out now. He doesn't say that. He says that she was conscious the entire time. And the Swedes are the only reason why he took off running, because they were being aggressive towards him. But we know she was unconscious. Before that point, we have two men who say she was unconscious, and that's the whole reason why they intervened. And so let's just, for the sake of argument, say that she was dancing with Brock. she was hanging out with him. As soon as she loses consciousness, it's over. There's no more consent. There's no more, this is okay. By all accounts, I feel that she definitely was unconscious because of other witnesses and the whole fact of her not recovering for 3.5 hours, even when they're pinching her nail beds and giving her smelling salts.
Let's go over the charges. The charges that were levied against Brock Turner were assault with intent to commit rape of an intoxicated woman, sexually penetrating an intoxicated person with a foreign object, and sexually penetrating an unconscious person with a foreign object. So three charges, and all of them are mentioning the intoxication and the unconsciousness. I mean, that's what these charges are covering. And those two factors are huge. Just like you just said, if someone loses consciousness, they can no longer give you consent. Why? I think it needs to be clarified right here so everyone knows, because some of you may not. But consent is given on a moment-to-moment basis. And any time a person, whether it's a man or a woman, can withdraw their consent.
And who really would want to have sex with somebody that's unconscious? That just blows my mind that somebody would do that and think it was okay. And again, to say, okay, well, maybe he didn't know she was unconscious. Maybe he was doing this and he was so drunk that he didn't realize. But that's not his statement. That is not his story. He says that she was conscious this entire time. Here's this weird thing called criminal intent. And you have, I guess, two versions of it. So when you're trying to prove criminal intent, you have general intent and then you have specific intent. General intent does not need to prove that you meant to break the law, only that you did the act. So if you ran a red light or ran a stop sign, you know, traffic violation, they don't have to prove that you meant to run the red light. They just prove that you did run the red light and then you get fined, penalized. Specific intent means that you really meant to break a law. You meant malice intent of some type that takes somebody else's rights away. When it comes to more serious crimes, they usually try to kick this over into the specific intent category, which is actually harder to prove than general intent.
Proving someone's intent is difficult because you can't get into their head. So you kind of need a story with it. The question is, what applies to this case?
Well, a defense is always going to want to kick it over into specific intent because it's harder to prove. He intended to sexually assault her. He intended to rape her. But his first thing to his defense attorney and the police is, I wasn't trying to rape her. We were just fooling around. Well, if somebody's unconscious, then it's no longer consensual. And this is now a sexual assault. I kick that over into general. I don't kick it into a specific anymore because somebody's unconscious. You know, there's no more debate about whether you intended to break the law. You did break the law. But this is the argument, the legal melee and debate that happens in our courtrooms every day.
The prosecution, they think that the alcohol plays a role here, but it's actually going to work against the defendant. That's how they look at this, right? They see it as you were taking advantage of someone who was incapacitated.
Yeah. And meanwhile, the defense is going to use the alcohol, one, against Emily. They're going to attack her credibility by saying her blood alcohol content was way higher than what she claimed she had drank. And how could he have known or perceived her state because of his intoxication level?
Boy, this sounds like it might be difficult to sort out.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's not difficult.
Again, when it comes to rape and sexual assault, for some reason in our society, these crimes are treated somewhat differently than most. There are very few other crimes that the primary defense is victim blaming. The primary defense is attacking the credibility of the accuser. I never heard of somebody getting their car stolen and having to explain why they parked it where they did or why they drive such a nice car in the first place. I never hear people who have been mugged on the street or a bank that's been robbed and they're questioned, why do you keep so much money on you?
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
We've never asked a victim of domestic abuse, what did you do to anger your abuser? That just doesn't happen. But when it comes to sexual assault, for some reason, now we're like, what were you wearing? What were you doing? How much did you have to drink? It's no wonder that most rapes and sexual assaults go unreported, because this is what we see. The victim has to expose themselves to the public, expose themselves to a court system.
And questions of character.
Yeah.
Like somehow this is all they're doing.
The first thing that happens is we question the victim. We decide if they're credible and if they somehow were asking for it. And it's disgusting to me to see that. And it's really hard to prove sexual assault and rape cases if the victim doesn't suffer any sort of physical wounds or harm. And if a condom was used or anything like that, it really is a he said, she said situation.
Yeah. And this is something that happens in this case where the prosecution points out that just because she's on a college campus and that it's a college student who's attacking her, that it's not somehow less than if that person was out, you know, somewhere in the city attacking someone in an alley. There's no difference. But there are people that look at it and say it's different. They'll say, oh, well, if it's a college student and there's a party and something happens, well, it's unfortunate, but it's not like someone was grabbed and pulled into an alley. But the prosecution is saying, no, literally, it's the same thing.
Well, it is the same thing.
Right. But again, yeah. if we talk about this, this is the problem with rape in this country, is that this is the way we're conditioned to think. This is what happens. The victims drag through the muck and we have to question their credibility. The person that's accused, well, man, look what they're having to go through. It only gets worse when it's a college student, because on the face of things, he looks great. He's an Olympic hopeful. He's a Stanford student. And if you look at pictures of him, I mean, if you judge a book by its cover, he's an ace, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's got everything going for him.
But again, this is not about Brock's past. It's not about Emily Doe's past. This is about what happened here at this moment in time when these two Swedish PhD students rode up on bikes and realized something criminal was going on.
A lot of people look at this case and they actually criticize some of the outcomes. They criticize the findings. Some people think this guy shouldn't have been charged with anything because she was unconscious or she didn't remember. So therefore, you cannot prove that a crime happened. But they completely leave out the Swedes. And I don't get how there's this absolute confirmation bias from people that don't take direct evidence. This isn't circumstantial evidence. This is direct evidence, eyewitness accounts. Now you can say, oh, well, it was dark out and how did they really know that she was unconscious? But they felt strongly enough that they jumped off their bikes and confronted a guy. I don't think that you do that on a whim, especially these two guys. They seem like really nice guys.
Every state varies when it comes to their definition of rape. California, their definition of rape includes the following: an act of sexual intercourse, including sexual penetration, no matter how slight, including where a person is prevented from resisting by any intoxicating or anesthetic substance or any controlled substance, and this condition was known or reasonably should have been known by the accused. Again, this is coming down to, if she was unconscious, then she is no longer giving consent. Now, if Brock is saying, oh, well, I was drinking too, but he's able to sprint away at high speed,
yeah,
and not just crashing into a tree, I think we can call it right there. And I mean, how does the court see it, Justin?
Well, they see it. The jury comes back with guilty verdicts. Now, he actually was originally charged with 5 counts. 2 of them were for rape. And then the other 3 that you have already read off were for sexual assault. Well, they dropped the 2 rape charges because of a definition in California. Every state's different. You know, he only penetrated her with his fingers or a foreign object. He did not penetrate her because his pants were on. So the rape charges are dropped. So it's sexual assault charges that he's facing. But it's really just a definition or a wording thing. It's not that the charges hold any less weight. They really don't. They're still serious charges.
As people would say, rape is rape.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I'm like, rape is rape, and I don't care what you use. If you're penetrating somebody with anything that's, you know, not consenting, then that's rape.
So the jury heard the debate in court. They understand both sides to this, and they side with Emily Doe.
Yes.
She was victimized and this guy did it. So he's guilty.
I think it was pretty open and shut. So case closed and podcast over, right?
Well, if only. The judge in this case, Judge Persky, it was up to him to sentence Brock because he was found guilty. The judge does the sentencing and the judge has what kind of limits here, Justin? How does California set some guidelines for the sentencing when it comes to sexual assault?
Well, they don't have any mandatory minimums at the time. They have mandatory minimums about drugs, but not sexual assault. So for one of the charges, it's like 2 to 4 to 6 years. And then other charges, it's up to 15 years in prison. So kind of serious business here. And of course, the judge can use his discretion on these prison terms, but he doesn't do that.
So the judge is looking at this, and as best as we can tell, the judge is looking at Brock Turner, and he's thinking to himself, this guy is a Stanford student. He is headed to the Olympics, probably, and all these great character witnesses. But there's this one moment in time, and we'll call it 20 minutes, where maybe he screwed up.
In the victim impact statement from Emily and a letter written to the judge and probation officers by Brock's father, which has some very poor wording in it. In Emily's victim impact statement, she references how this is a lose-lose for everybody, but she doesn't quite understand what she will gain from Brock being incarcerated. There's no restitution here. It's not that she's saying he shouldn't be incarcerated. She's saying, I don't know what I get out of this besides I'm a victim now and you did this to me, but I'm not going to get any justice no matter what from you because there's nothing you can do to make this better. Well, the judge interprets that in a weird way. And Brock's father, his letter says something to the effect of 20 minutes of action should not dictate the future of my son. And 20 minutes of action is very poorly worded because typically the word action is used in another way in a college party environment. So maybe 20 minutes of decision-making or something else. I don't know what the hell he could have said.
Sometimes people slip up and speak the truth. And you wonder here if that's what happened. Even his dad knows that Brock did wrong.
Well, and really from that 20 minutes of action should not dictate my son's future, should not destroy my son's future is, to me, that's an admission. Yeah, he did this. He did this for 20 minutes.
How many crimes can happen in 20 minutes?
You can do a lot of damage in 20 minutes. So the victim impact statement from Emily is brutal and honest, and you should read it. Brock's statements and his father's statement, I'm not really one that actually cares if the accused shows any signs of remorse. But in this case, there really isn't much remorse here. There's no even acknowledgement of wrongdoing from Brock that I could pick up on.
Well, okay, so it's a strategy, right? And I think it's really obvious that it's he didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
That's their strategy. And you can't have remorse in that instance. It's just like the West Memphis Three. You can't get them to say they're sorry if they're saying they didn't do it.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's their strategy. So there's no admission there. But what I like is Emily Doe says something which I think is her way of speaking out and trying to have a voice when there's been basically an attack on her character. After all, you know, she's the one who was drunk and, you know. So what she said in her statement was, regretting drinking is not the same as regretting sexual assault. We were both drunk. The difference is I did not take off your pants and underwear, touch you inappropriately, and run away. To clarify the difference between a crime and someone having a good time and maybe they were too drunk is she didn't commit a crime.
No, she didn't. But she was treated like she was a criminal.
Well, and certainly the defense was trying to paint it that way. We mentioned Judge Persky. He factors into this case because when it comes down to the sentencing, what sentence does he hand down? Remember, it's his discretion here. What sentence does he give Brock Turner?
Well, he makes this statement that incarceration will have a very detrimental impact on Brock. Brock is going to be a registered sex offender. He's going to have a lot of other outstanding punishments happen. But when it comes to jail time, and I'm saying jail in the sense of jail and not prison, he gets 6 months in jail and he's released after like 3-ish months. So this sentence for, by all accounts, a proven sexual assault that is backed up with physical evidence, direct evidence, circumstantial evidence.
Eyewitness evidence. So, and we've said this, I don't know how many times, that eyewitnesses can get information wrong, but this isn't identifying the wrong person here.
No.
This is identifying someone doing something that was obviously wrong. Just like if you'd walked up to a church and you saw some guy lighting a Molotov cocktail, I mean, you might get his eye color wrong, but you're not going to get wrong that he was lighting a bottle on fire that had a rag sticking out of it.
Especially if you tried to stop him. Another interesting tidbit is the Swedish guys are able to pick Brock out of a lineup later and identify him. Brock doesn't even know Emily's name, nor can he identify her. Just so you know.
The controversy of this case is that Judge Persky gave Brock a very light sentence, a slap on the wrist. Judge Persky says, well, this is a young guy. He's a good college student. He has a good history. And I think what he's trying to say is that just incarcerating him for 10 years, 15 years, whatever, isn't going to do any good. And I think we brought that up many times where we try to weigh it out. Is it worth putting someone away? The problem here is that we're living in this country where sexual assault, rape victims aren't taken seriously. We have many, many thousands of rape kits that don't get tested. There are serial rapists operating all the time. We know there's a huge problem with it in this country. And so every time there's a case that comes along that involves rape or sexual assault, we're having to weigh it out. Like, what kind of sentence do we give? The problem is it's never been taken seriously enough. And I don't care if this guy has never done anything wrong before. The problem is if you give a sentence that's really light like this based on, well, he's not been a bad guy up till now, then what you're doing is you're giving him a forgiveness for a crime that's pretty damn serious. And it's almost like you're telling the public, you get a freebie. And so right now there's a recall effort underway. And I believe that Judge Persky is up for re-election in June. And so the debate has been between those who feel like this judge needs to be recalled and those who are saying, well, the judge did nothing wrong. He's operating in the law.
Yeah. I mean, he had his discretion to go with a lighter sentence. So,
and so that was the question. When I started researching this case, I asked myself, was the judge operating within the law? And is that enough for us not to have him recalled? You know, and by us, I mean just the general public, people who are concerned about this case. And I do know that California has since passed minimums when it comes to these kinds of cases. I think it was in 2016, right?
Mandatory minimum. Yeah.
Yeah. So now there are more guidelines and you could say the system is starting to work. You know, we're fixing it, but that may not be enough. And I'll tell you why.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
Judge Persky has been defended by every legal person I can look up online. I mean, I found article after article after article all saying the same thing, which is you can't recall the judge because you're now saying that the system doesn't work and that we can just go after people because we don't like one decision. And even the judge has said, you can't take this one thing that I've done and negate all the other things I've done because of the one thing. But I'll tell you what he did. What he did was he said basically that he believes Brock Turner in this.
Yeah.
He's siding with Brock Turner.
Yeah, that's the thing is he's using the mitigating factors. Mainly, he doesn't think that they proved a crime happened. He's literally saying it was kind of a loose and shaky case here. So even though the jury found you guilty, I question that.
And that is why I think the recall effort is a good effort, because rape and sexual assault have been so misunderstood, so under prosecuted in this country, not taken seriously. And we need to start taking it seriously. We need to start getting educated on it. And we can't get educated on it. We can't have any progress as long as we keep saying she was drunk. She said okay at some point, and that's good enough. she was unconscious. And at that point, I don't care if she had said yes all night long up until that point, he should have gotten off of her, but he didn't. The only reason he stopped doing what he was doing is because of these two fine young Swedish gentlemen.
Yeah. That's my thing with the judge. When he says, well, incarceration is going to have a very detrimental impact on this young man. No crap. Like, that's what incarceration does. We're not into rehabilitation in this country. We're into punishment. And denying somebody their freedom, incarceration, is the most severe punishment we can really dish out. And we dish it out every day for drug dealers and petty crimes. I agree that incarceration is an impact and is a detrimental factor for a lot of young men and women, but we are supposed to use this against violent offenders. Why don't we? Why do we only use it against, well, I mean, the whole mandatory sentencing happens with a drug dealer. I hate to break it down. I'm not trying to defend drug dealers. A lot of these people are scummy, but you have two consenting adults. You have one person that's selling the drug and you have another consenting adult that's buying the drug. In sexual assault and rape, one of those people, the victim, isn't consenting to this. So how are we not taking this as seriously as other crimes?
I think it's an ugly truth that a lot of people aren't willing to face yet. You brought up criminal intent earlier. I want to bring up the intent of the judge because he could have sentenced Brock any number of ways. And for me, it's not even about the length of time. It's how he gets there. And that's why, like I said, the recall effort is an honorable one, because you can't allow people who are making these decisions in these trials to come from such a bad place. I mean, he didn't understand what a victim was in this case to me. He didn't understand what rape was. I mean, there are so many things that the judge clearly does not understand that, forget the sentencing, it's the way that he gets there that's the problem. And so for me, the intent is very clear. And this is a judge who I certainly wouldn't want him overseeing any cases. I mean, what if one of our relatives was trying to defend herself in a case against some person who had raped her? And here's this judge saying, but they were such a good guy up till then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Or you might have said yes at one point, but you were drunk, so you don't remember. It's like, oh.
I understand mitigating factors, but here, no. You might argue how many years to give him, but literally he didn't even get to years. He only has to serve half that time, and he only served half, Justin.
He's out. He's out.
3 months, he's out. I know. The people who side with Brock Turner are going to say, oh, his life has been hell. He's been hounded by media. There have been protests. Yeah, people are angry. I'll bet you anything, if the judge had done the right thing in the courtroom when it came to the sentencing, we wouldn't see those protests.
No, we wouldn't even be talking about this case if the judge had done the right thing.
This was all on the judge, and he screwed it up. And it's because he literally does not understand what he was dealing with. When someone breaks the law like this, then you need to handle it professionally. And to me, it wasn't. It was basically, oh, he was a good kid. 20 minutes of action shouldn't ruin his life. And this one decision on my part shouldn't ruin my life. He's trying to have it that way for both Brock and himself. It's like he's tied with Brock in too many ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, I hate to say this, but Judge Persky almost seems like he identifies with Brock. That's how I take it.
Yeah, like they're giving high fives to each other in the back room or something.
Why give him a slap on the wrist, you know? And now that all this heat has come down, now he's trying to hide behind, well, I didn't do anything wrong. Well, Justin, we covered Kelly Thomas.
Yeah, they didn't do anything wrong, right?
Yeah, they didn't do anything wrong, but someone died.
Yeah.
And once again, we're trying to make excuses for certain types of people.
Oh man, you're going to get me on a rant here.
But I mean, we don't even have to go on the rant. I think people know what we're getting at here, but some people just, they're just lucky like that.
Well, and this is the defense of Brock, the whole topic of sexual assault. And there's the term out there, it's called rape culture. And there's a lot of people that deny rape culture. They deny that America has a problem. And rape culture is the I'm going to summarize this, but it's pretty much the slut shaming and the victim blaming of victims of rape and sexual assault, and the enabling of sexual predators to feel that this behavior is okay and to get away with it. People that question rape culture in America will say that, you know, well, there's other countries that have way higher rates of rape and they're nothing like America. Try going over there. And I'm thinking like, well, one, aren't we supposed to be like doing it the best? Also, you know, if you're going to lower the bar to make something right, like, oh, well, Dennis Rader wasn't that bad. I mean, compare him to Stalin. I mean, it's like, okay, well, that's sort of missing the point. Also, my own definition isn't something of rape culture, isn't something you can pin on one element or one thing in society. It's not, you know, one judge making a bad call. It's an overall view of women, their role in society. It's views of women being the weaker sex in these roles and held to these standards. You know, both men and women are objectified every day in the media. It happens. It's an overall lean towards women should be submissive while men are the dominant. That creates all of these influences that place women in harm's way without access to recourse or justice. I will concede that there's a rape culture, but when people deny it, it's like, well, college campuses have just as much sexual assault as anywhere else, or other countries are way worse. Fine, you got your talking points, but when we have a judge who gives somebody a slap on the wrist, when we have our justice system that doesn't treat sex crimes with the same validity as other crimes, you know, if I'm selling crack at the elementary school down the street, they seize my car. If I'm selling crack out of my house, they take my house. But if I'm a serial rapist, raping people in my house, they don't get to take my house. Weird, right? There seems to be an abundance of federal and state funds for the war on drugs, but we have a backlog of rape kits. We have repeat offenders for drug offenses or petty crimes that get 5 to 10 years, yet a rapist sometimes gets probation. Even if you don't believe in rape culture, there is a problem here. What is the message that our justice system is sending? And that's, you are not a priority because you cost us more than a regular drug dealer or a gang member, where we could take their property and then sell it or something to that effect. I mean, I'm not even trying to do a whole conspiracy here, but I'm just connecting the dots of the way I see them.
You're following the money.
Yeah. So violent crimes, it doesn't pay the state or the police. So there's less incentive for them to go after this. But when it comes to seizing property, well, that they have a little bit more of a stake in that.
Yeah, that's if you look at the way Judge Persky handled this, it's almost like he's saying that Brock's future is too important to let this one woman who had a problem with what he did trip up his run here. It's disgusting. And that's where it needs to be said that we need to do something about it. If you see something, say something. And that's what these two Swedish guys said. That's what we're saying. And it's not like we're the heroes, but we're just trying to get the message out that this isn't something that we should just step aside and let happen. And for anyone that's on the fence about the judge, just keep in mind, if he doesn't understand what rape is, and if he can somehow say that some young man's future is more important than some young woman's future, that's just a dangerous mind at work.
Yeah. And I will agree that I don't want a judge to determine the law based on public outcry. I want them to enforce the law by the letter of the law and decide by the letter of the law. In this case, I'm like, what is justice? It's just like my same question in the last case. I'm like, what is justice? I don't really know anymore. Is it number of years behind bars? What do we gain? But when I see a decision like this, I throw my hands up and I go, I don't know what justice is anymore. I don't know what makes this right, but I sure as heck know this is a wrong.
Yeah, I think that's what we hope for most when it comes to these cases, is that the judge will get it. So when the judge speaks in the courtroom, you get the feeling that the person who did wrong is getting a message sent to them. We may not be set up to rehabilitate people, but that moment when they're being sentenced, it's really that time where they can be educated. And in this case, there was no education going on. And that's just really, that's just plain sad. Brock Turner is no longer with Stanford, is he, Justin?
No, I mean, I am thankful that he is a registered sex offender, and he's, I don't know, what, working like landscaping jobs or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's justice, but this is all his doing. He put himself in that position. He is no longer with Stanford. Stanford seems to have responded pretty well to this. In fact, you know, one of the words of 2018, at least for me so far, has been the word triggered. And I'm sure we all know what that means. For anyone who's dealt with a rape or a sexual assault, there are certain things that can trigger them, and it causes them to, I mean, basically re-experience anything associated with what happened to them. What ended up happening with this dumpster site where Emily Doe was raped by Brock Turner, they transformed it into a contemplative space, and it has benches and a fountain. And I'd say their whole aim of this was to have a place where people are reminded without triggers that people are victimized. We need to think about this stuff, but we can have them do it in a very serene place where they're not triggered, where they can feel safe. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.